Welcome to Email After Hours by Senderscore, powered by Validity.
We're your hosts. My name is Guy Hansen.
And I'm Danielle Gallant, and this is Email After Hours. If you enjoy a good mystery, today's episode is for you. Being an email marketer or consultant can sometimes feel a lot like being a detective. You're always on the hunt for clues, tracking open rates, clicks, and just generally diving into the weeds of a specific program. And just like detectives tailor their approach to solve a case, senders should bring a unique toolkit to every email mystery or issue that they encounter. And when things go wrong, say a drop in engagement rates on any given campaign, it's up to us to piece together evidence and find out what really went wrong. Today on the pod, we have a true email pro who is here to talk with us about some of her best email cases and discuss how she helped clients crack each one. So let's jump into the rabbit hole of email detective hunts, red herrings, often neglected basics, and let's face it, even the best and most seasoned email marketers might miss some.
And actually, much, much more than just a true email pro. Joining us today is Alice Cornell, and she is a genuine email industry legend. She's got two decades of experience under her belt. She's collaborated with a vast range of email senders around the world, from industry giants down to the up-and-comers. And now she shares all of that experience in her latest role as a deliverability consultant. And if you want to learn more about her, you can find her at alicecornell.com. It's that easy. She also proudly serves as co-chair of the Diversity and Inclusion Committee at MORG. That is the esteemed Messaging, Malware, and Mobile Anti-Abuse Working Group. Welcome to the show, Alice. It's so great to have you with us today. We're so excited.
Thank you very much for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be here. And yes, MORG's full name really is a mouthful, isn't it?
We have tried to tackle that before on previous episodes. And before we really get into our topic of the day, I know that you and Guy go way back. Are there any good stories of your time working together that you'd like to share with Email After Hours listeners? I was told about a couple Moscow stories.
We did have a very fun trip to Moscow, and which was amazing, slightly confusing. It took us a while to work out how to cross the road in Moscow because we didn't realize at the time that everything happens underground because it's inconvenient to be above ground for some of the year. Once we'd worked out how to cross the road, we then went on to have really quite a good time. What was your best bit of that, Guy?
Horseradish vodka. If you ever want to do cheap teeth whitening, horseradish vodka takes the enamel off your teeth.
You heard it here first.
It's very true. I mean, the other good thing, though, is if you don't fancy the horseradish vodka, you could also get tea in the bars and clubs there. It comes in an amazingly elaborate teapot in our experience, which as a Brit abroad, really enjoyed.
Moving on to today's topic. We all know that email marketing, it's normally like a well-oiled machine, but, you know, sometimes even the best machines backfire a bit. We've seen a lot of shifts in the email landscape over the past couple of years. You're thinking about Apple disrupting with MPP, and we've got LTP coming up, and suddenly Gmail's new inactivity definitions and account deletions are on the horizon. So how do these changes impact tried and trusted, you know, strategies that companies and email strategists like us have relied upon for years? You know, it makes life more difficult, doesn't it?
It really does make life quite a lot more difficult. We've come to rely on those things as crutches, but they were also giving us a sort of easy out. And I found that these new changes in the landscape have actually made us focus a lot more on the important things for our email programs. And some of the basics don't change. So sending good quality mail to people that have asked for it and want to receive it is, you know, never changes. But we can never sit back on our and rest on our laurels because these changes are being made for a reason. The mailbox providers are constantly trying to protect their users, and we have to roll with those changes. They're there for a reason. It's not just to make our lives difficult, but it's to make the whole landscape better for everybody. So staying on top of them is absolutely crucial. And especially if you want to reach the inbox, and staying ahead of those kinds of, you know, these best practices, these constant moving in the industry is absolutely vital. I suppose if we could just set it and forget it, then, well, we'd be out of a job, guy. So there's a silver cloud, a silver light, rather.
And now let's get into our first email mystery, so to speak. Sometimes the obvious clues are staring us right in the face and we fail to see them. Have you encountered a situation where a client just inadvertently maybe overlooked the basics?
I'm finding it quite often, actually, speaking to people, finding that one of the things that's come up recently is more and more people are trying to move towards setting their DMARC record to be P equals reject, so they get the full benefit of the security that provides. But I found that what happens is we found that although their authentication has been working so far, implementing P equals reject for DMARC really forces a full review of authentication. And it often highlights issues that we haven't noticed previously. And especially that comes out when we're partnering with an organization is partnering with a third party, like a ticketing system, for example. Suddenly you find a whole bunch of mail that you didn't realize was affiliated with your mail. So these basics, like making sure that DKIM and SPF are sewn up and correct and working, sometimes if it doesn't appear broken, doesn't mean that it's implemented correctly. So I find that going P equals reject is an amazing exercise for making sure that your authentication is all sewn up. I'm sure you have experience with that, Guy.
I saw a sender recently who shall remain nameless, who forgot to define their email marketing program as part of their group DMARC strategy, which was a problem indeed.
Ouch. I mean, it's difficult, isn't it? Because there's a lot of different areas in a business. People can make changes that you're not aware of. So perhaps your SPF isn't valid any longer, or perhaps it's got too many lookups or all of those things. And these things can happen outside of your remit. So having that joined up thinking, absolutely essential.
That's right. And then, as we were saying in our intro, just when you think you've got spam all figured out, the rules of the game can change. So continuing with the storytelling, you got any memorable tales of clients where, yeah, sort of a big industry change happened and they just completely missed the memo?
I was working with a client recently who, they're an amazing organization. They've got a really good email reputation. Their program is excellent. And they're actually dealing with the data held by microchips in pets, for pets. Absolutely fantastic. But their mail really spikes around the holidays because that's when most pets go missing. And I thought, oh my goodness, of course. It's really important to make sure that everybody's microchip data is up to date, all of those things. And they haven't had a problem with their email. But what they were finding is that what it discovered was that because there's a spike in data around the holidays, what was true 3 years ago as far as bounce processing was concerned wasn't true today. And they needed to update their practices because they thought, we've got this sewn up. We know what we're doing. And they do know what they're doing. But unfortunately, the ground is constantly moving under our feet. And so we have to keep up and keep everything current. And I think anybody who's au fait with the world of deliverability will know about the bounce codes are one, an amazing source of information, but also constantly changing. So we need to be aware of that and make sure that we're set up correctly to deal with it.
I have two kind of follow-up thoughts immediately. One is, that's a mystery on a mystery, missing pets and an email program. And then two, it is so hard to stay up to date. I think that every day I'm reading about major changes, or at least changes that are going to impact some of my clients. How do you stay up to date, Alice, on what's been going on in the industry? And what sources do you turn to for email news?
Oh my goodness, the good thing about the email world is it is so full of incredibly clever people who are very generous with their knowledge and their thoughts and the results of their work and experiments. I mean, being part of Morg, of course, is really useful for some of the major changes within the industry. But I also, of course, am part of Email Geeks, which is great for conversation. Women of Email is a great, really non-judgmental group of people who are happy to share info. And then I follow people. I mean, I'm getting more obsessed with LinkedIn. I think it's my middle age kicking in. But LinkedIn is so interesting to me now. And I follow people like Lauren Mayer and Laurie Beth Blair. Alison Gutti wrote something really interesting recently. Jen Nespola at Kickbox, there's amazing, there's some great blog series. And also, who else? Word to the Wise. There's just so much out there. You know, you can lose hours reading what these wise and clever people have to say.
I worry about that connection between LinkedIn and middle age because I spend a lot of time in LinkedIn. And I'm not liking the direction this is pointing. Anyway, So the next question, we've all completely botched it at some point. You know, Danielle and I were talking about this on our previous episode, and I think we had far too much fun talking about email mishaps. But, you know, here we're talking about where even the best intention strategies just didn't quite hit the mark. And have you seen that? You ever worked with a program where they just got it completely wrong and ended up on the naughty step with Gmail and Microsoft and all the other big mailbox providers?
I think we all have, haven't we, at some time? And we just got to learn from those mistakes. And actually, my disaster story is one we really learned from. So working with an organization and somebody who shall remain nameless on their team decided that, oh, look, we've got all these addresses that haven't engaged with us for some years. Why don't we see if we can re-engage them by sending it to them all at once? So they sent to their entire sunsetted file, which was literally millions of addresses. And they did it in batches of recency, which was really interesting because it showed that Gmail completely filtered us 100%. They filtered the older addresses, the ones that weren't active. So they just saw a load of dead data and they went, this is just terrible. And all mail went to the spam folder 100%. But Microsoft filtered the more recent batches because they were looking at complaints and that batch was more active. And so they were much more likely to complain. And so they filtered 100% based on that. And yes, that was a no mail being sent globally for some time. And it was a worry, but it was really interesting to see how the different mailbox providers treated the disaster on their own terms. So, you know, Gmail certainly was much more bothered about the activity and Microsoft around the complaints.
They all have their own ecosystems, don't they?
Exactly.
And what was, just out of curiosity, what was your deliverability advice to that client? How did you help them mitigate?
Well, it's sort of the tried and tested. Go back to your most active users. Send small, send often, send your best performing mail to rebuild that reputation so that you can rebuild the trust with the mailbox providers once again. I think depending on the mailbox provider, it might be worth creating a ticket or letting the postmaster there know that you've done something really terrible. But really, you can reach out to them all you like, but the proof is going to be in the data and they're going to want to be able to see those positive engagement metrics really spike after the terrible negative metrics that they've seen. If they're not seeing that, then your mail is going to remain floundering in the spam folder. But if you can send to your active users, show that people want your mail and that you won't do anything so foolish again, then it may take a while. It's hard to say, it depends program to program, but weeks should of good sending should fix it.
And in fact, you touch on the next question I wanted to put to you, because I guess the way I see it is if we're going to liken ourselves to email detectives, then metrics are our forensic tools. You know, metrics, metrics, metrics. We emphasize them all the time. But do you think it's common that we occasionally work with clients who don't pay attention to their metrics, or even worse, they're paying attention to the wrong metrics?
Well, I think it's really common, and I think it's really confusing these days now that we can't trust open rates, we're told, and now click rates being warped as well by automatic clicks from spam checking filters, etc. So what can we rely on these days? And, you know, I think that what has become true and really obvious since we don't rely on open metrics as much as we used to do, which was a shortcut metric anyway at the time, is really thinking about what you're trying to find out. What's the purpose of your email? What is success for you? And so I'm encouraging clients to look at different things depending on the email flow. Number one, if I want to know if I've got a deliverability issue in my mail, I look at metrics per mailbox provider. Now, it doesn't matter if the open rate isn't exact. What is great is I can see a trend in open rate. And if one of the mailbox providers shows a huge dip in that open when all the rest are really high, then I'm willing to bet that they're probably having an issue reaching the inbox and people aren't seeing their mail. So I'm looking there for deliverability issues. But it really depends what your measure of success is. You know, the conversion, as we say, is what really matters. And that might be different mail stream to mail stream. It may be that this mail is driving site visits. This mail is driving sales. And you might want to look at the metrics differently because not all mail performs the same and it's not all there to do the same thing. Those are the ultimate metrics. What is your measure of success? What are you sending the mail for? What is its purpose? And is it managing it.
Alice Cornell emails Sherlock Holmes.
I thought Alice was going to get all Douglas Adams on us when she said, you know, what's the purpose of email? You know, the answer is 42.
Always 42.
Well, and subscribers are smart, right? They can spot robotic, generic batch and blast campaigns a mile away. Have you ever encountered a situation with a client where maybe their subscribers called their bluff or called them out?
I don't know if I would say they called them out, but you definitely see when something doesn't resonate well with users that they respond badly. And we were talking before about the positive engagement metrics the mailbox providers like to see. Well, if you're not sending mail that people respond to positively, you're not going to get those metrics. So my example for this would be a client who set up their welcome message, which is a really great best practice, welcoming people once they've subscribed to their organization. But unfortunately, the welcome message came from the founder of the company. And there's a real disconnect as the recipient didn't know who that was. Like, who is this person, this strange man emailing me? Because he didn't put two and two together. And sometimes it's easy to be in your own bubble in an organization thinking, oh, of course, everybody knows our illustrious founder. He's amazing. But actually, a lot of the folks may not. So making sure that that's really joined up, because people didn't recognize him, they were saying that mail was spam because they're like, who is this person emailing me? So those negative metrics meant mail is going to the spam folder. That's just not helpful. And it's not a great first experience. So it's really about making sure that what you're sending makes sense, is joined up. It follows on the action that the user's just taken, that they can put that, they can make that story. It becomes a conversation that you're having with the user rather than just a tool to say, our founder is amazing.
That's absolutely right. But, you know, metrics are great, but you still need the right tools to find those metrics. You think about real life detectives, they've got their toolkit, they've got their magnifying glasses, they've got their fingerprinting kits, they've got their phone bugs. So as email professionals, what are your go-to tools? Where do you start when you're investigating a brand new email mystery?
I always want to know, of course, what domain and IPs the mail's being sent over. That's in my basics. I'm going to have a look at the reputation on those using all sorts of tools. MX Tools is great. There are many other third parties out there providing them. Guy, what I think is a really good best practice to start with is I sign up as if I'm a user of the service so I can understand what the experience is like for the user. Because often there are things that sometimes welcome series or welcome messages or the subscribe process has been set up some time ago. And it's getting more and more important to make sure that people feel reassured that you're going to look after their data, that you know what you're doing, that they can unsubscribe, that you have a good privacy policy, all of those things. So signing up as the user to understand what that experience is like is just such a great way to identify possible issues within the program. But following that, I mentioned bounces before. I love bounce codes. They just tell you so much about how receiving mailbox providers are viewing your mail and your reputation and other filtering organizations, et cetera. They can just give you some great clues towards what issues might be. So those, I would say, are my top tools, but there are many.
This is so helpful. I feel like even within such a short window, you have highlighted such key elements and questions that my clients for sure bring up often, especially with your example about let's mail to everybody in our suppressed file. Why can't we do that? Why isn't that a problem? But before we wrap up, and we are at the time where sadly we're going to have to start to wrap this up, we of course are going to send a couple of quick fire questions your way, Alice, and I'm going to kick it off. Guy mentioned we just recently had an episode about email mistakes. Of course, these are commonly referred to as oops emails. Have you ever had any embarrassing oops moments in email that you're willing to share?
You know, it's been a while since I've executed mail, but I still have that fear of pressing the button. I think everybody has that fear of pressing the send button. And I will share something that happened to a very dear ex-colleague of mine who was sending a mail about Halloween costumes. And the subject line went something along the lines of "Nympho Halloween costume." I'm hoping this is okay to say we are after hours. She didn't know what that was referring to. She thought it was some sort of wood elf, like a nymph. But I have to say that subject line got us a really good open rate. But I'm not sure it was terribly on brand, and she was mortified, and she'll probably shout at me for sharing that. But I, it was one of those things. She didn't know. She made an honest mistake. It went out to a large list. But as I say, the open weights were impressive, but it's probably not something we'd want to try again. And it's not something I'm advocating for either. It's just to be
That's sweet. A weirdly sweet and innocent oops for what it actually was. That might be my favorite one I've heard so far. That's great.
I wish we'd heard that story before we recorded the last episode. We'd have used it. That's awesome. No. And Mark, quick question for you, Alice. I mean, like us, you've done a load of webinars over the years. You've presented plenty of them. You've attended a lot of them too. And what do you reckon is the weirdest thing you've ever learned from a webinar?
Well, I always learn things from webinars. I find them so useful. Just it sort of just re-engages my brain, makes me think about things in different ways. Recently, I was at a webinar. Someone reminded me that you should always use HTTPS, not HTTP links in your mail. I was just like, oh, why? Of course. I've not even been looking for that, taking that for granted. But if we're talking about the weirdest thing I've ever learned, Guy, you know what that has to be. Did you know, and I learned this in a very interesting webinar, that the phases of the moon affect email engagement? Guy, you might want to speak a bit more on that.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, we did establish that. We crunched about 6 months worth of data across the casual dining sector, and we did indeed discover that there was a statistically significant correlation between read rates and what the moon was doing, and people were definitely more immune for pizza when the moon was full. That's true.
I love your data crunching. It just always shows such good stories. The werewolf effect is one of my favorites, I have to say.
Okay. I mean, I think these hot take questions, these quick fire questions, I hope everybody listening makes it to the end of this episode. They are maybe, if not the most helpful parts, they are certainly the most interesting. And thank you so much, Alice, for joining us today. Guy, is there anything you want to wrap us up with?
No, this has been yet another awesome episode, Alice. It's been great to have you with us today. And to our email after hours audience, join us again in 2 weeks' time, and we've got more great email after hours conversations lined up for you. Join us then.
Thanks, everyone.
Be sure to tune in next time and hit subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. And don't forget to visit senderscore.com for loads more great resources to help you become a stronger sender.
To all you sleepless senders out there, thank you for joining us after hours, and see you next time.